Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
And good afternoon, everybody. Happy Tuesday, and welcome to another hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. And if you missed the first hour, we're actually doing something a little bit different today. We are picking up on a conversation that we started in the last hour. Once, twice a year this happens, where we will have a guest that goes for four segments or more. And that's the case right now. We've been talking with Jake and Heather Kim. Their ministry is called Life Restoration, and their work is about helping people find healing in Jesus. They work to awaken disciples of Christ by connecting them to Christ, their authentic self, and kingdom living. And through human and spiritual formation, they join Jesus in bringing the kingdom of God into our everyday lives. And so we're going to continue that conversation. We got one more segment to go. And if you missed any part of it, you can find the rest in the Cresta Guest Archives at AveMariaRadio.net. And then we'll be sitting down with Jeannie Ewing. You may be familiar with the classic Tom Petty song, "The Waiting's the Hardest Part." Our culture seems to have two different ideas of waiting. We either hate it, and that was me driving in traffic this morning, or if you're at the long line of the red light, or you're in line at the drive-thru, and you know you sit there for more than about 30 seconds, and then you're flipping on the radio, and you're pulling your phone out, and you're fixing your hair in the mirror, whatever. That's the one part of waiting. We hate waiting. There's also the part of us that loves waiting, but that can turn into slothfulness very easily. Waiting is a recurring theme in the Bible. Noah waited for the floodwaters to recede. Abraham waited for a son, the Israelites waited for the promised land, and now we all wait for the return of Christ. Jeannie Ewing joining us to talk about why God makes us wait and how he speaks to us in these times when nothing seems to be happening. She's the author of numerous books, including Waiting with Purpose, Persevering When God Says Not Yet, and you can learn more about her work at JeannieEwing.com. I also wanted to make you aware, this Thursday, there will be a special National Mass for Life and the March for Life in Ottawa, Thursday, May 9th, 10:30 Eastern on EWTN TV. EWTN providing full coverage of the annual March for Life event from Ottawa, Canada, beginning with Archbishop Marcel Davous celebrating Canada's National Mass for Life from the Notre Dame Cathedral, followed by the March for Life Ottawa, Canada's most significant pro-life event. Get all the details at EWTN.com. Let's go to this interview after this news break with Steve Clark.
Thanks, Brian. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. For Tuesday, May 7th, it's the Feast of St. Rose Venerini. Today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. The Vatican's Doctrine Office will publish a new document next week on discerning Marian apparitions and other supernatural events. The Catholic Church calls for, quote, great prudence in examining the facts related to presumed apparitions of revelations. According to the 1978 norms, it's the Church's responsibility to first judge the facts before permitting public devotion in the case of an alleged apparition. Columbia University law students are being blacklisted by more than a dozen judges. A group of 13 U.S. federal judges are warning Columbia it will not hire their law school students and graduates due to how the institution handled anti-Israel protests. In a letter obtained by Reuters, the judges who were appointed by former President Trump expressed they have lost confidence in the university and called it, quote, an incubator of bigotry. Russian President Vladimir Putin is ordering military drills that include preparing for the use of tactical nuclear weapons.
Putin said Monday's order for the drills are in response to threats by the West. Tactical nuclear weapons are for use on the battlefield as opposed to strategic nuclear weapons that are capable of destroying entire cities. Putin's order comes as today marks his inauguration ceremony for his fifth term as president. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The Boy Scouts of America is changing its name to Scouting America. The organization saying it's officially making the change next February as a sign of its commitment to inclusion. More than 1 million youth are currently enrolled in the Boy Scout programs across the nation. and includes over 175,000 girls. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, continuing my conversation with Jake and Heather Kim, founders of Life Restoration Ministries. As we close off the last segment, we were talking about the experience I had back in between 1982 and 1985 of depression, hospitalized for it, how the universe had been bleached of all meaning. And at some point along the way, the turning point came when I realized that faith and hope are necessary for human thriving. And prior to that, I had always been suspicious of any psychological compensations a person gets from, quote, religious belief. Because I was saying, well, you have to believe because it's true.
Uh-huh.
And my definition of true was pretty narrow.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be somehow empirically verifiable, or it had to be logically inescapable. And when I realized that, wait a minute, that kind of thinking has almost killed me here. That certainly doesn't make any sense at all. So the fact that faith is necessary, hope is necessary, the real question is, who's the object of your faith? And for me, as a Christian, I was a very active Christian at the time. That was one of the reasons that began the walk back. And later, when I got to the end, that I spun my wheels there for probably a year, eventually I was down at the Abbey Gethsemane in Bardstown, Kentucky, and the words of Jesus, my God, why have you forsaken me, hit me in a way that never struck me before. And I realized, wait a minute, the Christian story does have a place for this experience of the apparent absence of God. It's the Son of God.
Right.
And so for me, that was like, whew, fireworks. And shortly after that, I got a call to pastor a church.
Wow.
Then I got called to do some radio work. And so that was incredible. And I couldn't have done pastoral work without that experience of being broken down, because I was a real hard ass, as they say, before that.
Yeah.
So not fit for pastoral duty.
I think you might have indirectly answered one of the most difficult questions, and I feel like it's one of the best ways to answer it is through real story. You correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You had life going along, and it was okay. And then this depression monster comes out of what probably felt like nowhere, and it literally sucked the life out of you. And you go into these really dark places, and then you talk about an encounter with God, and that encounter with God then launched you into a whole other dimension of life, a whole other season of life.
Yep.
Now, this is probably going to sound hard to hear, but you tell me, do you think you would have had the same level of intimacy with God that you had after this horrible season? If you had never experienced that, what would the relationship be like?
There's absolutely no doubt that through that experience, my relationship to God and others reached a level, a much deeper level. That's what I'm saying. This is one of those where the suffering has, there's an unambiguous fruit and benefit from it. You always wish you can point to tell other people you're going to have the same kind of clarity. So I had great moral clarity on this, and I can't imagine what my life would have been without it now.
That I think is a beautiful point. And this sounds weird, and I just want to caveat it with this. We're talking about things that start to go beyond the comprehension that I think we can have and requires. We have to double down on faith, which is God can draw us closer through suffering.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy. It even sounds cruel. Yeah. And this is where the mind and heart of God are so far beyond. And yet your story is a living example.
Yeah.
Now, here's the real dilemma is you have now a second story that doesn't have the same conclusion at this point.
Yeah, it's a different, different. And,
right.
and it's not as, I can fill in the blanks
okay.
And get some satisfaction, but it's not nearly as clear. And I'm kind of still praying. I'm still staying open. I'm getting older.
Right.
And I'm saying, maybe I'm not going to know.
Yes.
You know, until I'm face to face with Christ. But I still try to say, okay, Lord, you know, I'm not quite certain. I know for one thing that after, I mean, this sounds kind of crazy, it would be subject to great misunderstanding. But I'll say it because I trust everybody's goodwill who's listening.
Yes.
You know, we have that statement from Jesus that if your eye offends, pluck it out.
Yes.
Your hand offends, cut it off. Well, my case, my leg cut off. I'm less, I can't ambulate like I used to. And that's also related to the word for ambition. And so there's something about that experience which the Lord was saying to me, stop running around. Stop running around with what you're doing here. Wow. Stay focused. And it's interesting that that happened the very year that Ave Maria Radio had to become financially self-sufficient.
Wow.
So it forced me to sit still. Can't go run around doing speaking engagements. Can't write, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that makes sense. That makes sense to me. Makes sense to me.
Makes sense to me.
Still doesn't give me the full... You come back and you say, okay, Lord, I get the logic of it, but wasn't there a less painful way to do do this?
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So
is it possible, Al, that this just popped in my mind, you tell me if this resonates or not, that you believed your lovability came from how productive you are and were, and the Lord slowed you down possibly to say, I love you all the same? Is that
let me say that it would make, given the way I was raised, this makes some sense.
Okay.
But there's no emotional catharsis of that sort that accompanies it.
Yes.
But you know. I ran away from home many times just to get away from my house because I wanted to be off on my own, working on my own. So, I look back at that. It's so long ago.
Right.
But I think there was a drivenness, you know, about me, which is not the same as being called. And I think much of my adult life has to do with distinguishing, am I called or am I driven?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, many of these things are a mystery. Like you're saying, you know, like you may never know. And there's things in my own story I think I may never know till the end when God reveals all things.
Yeah.
And but what it does stir up in me is the question of, do we trust him?
Yeah.
Even if we don't understand, even if we don't know the meaning or the answer, do we trust him that he's good? And when I look at the story of Thomas and I see his doubt, and you're talking about the gift of faith, you know, and Jesus allows him to have this personal experience of encounter with him in the places where he's doubting. And I think Jesus, like, will you come to me in my doubt in the places that I can't see, that there's a fog, that I don't know where you are, and will you bring your presence there to meet me there? Because that image of Thomas, like, putting his hand into the side of Christ where wounds are, Jesus actually has flipped that on its head for me, to where he is putting his hand into my wounds. And the difference is that his hand doesn't come with doubt and fear.
Amen.
His hand
That's
comes
nice.
With healing and power and love and acceptance and mercy. And that's the hand that I want to touch all of those places that are unresolved in me and unresolved in my story. And for most of us, we're not going to know. You know, did God make it happen? Does he allow it to happen? All I know is that God is good, that he would never cause harm. He's a God of life. He's not a God of death. We put a lot of things on God, and that's easy to do because we don't understand, and we have human capabilities. But this is where the gift of faith comes in, and I pray for it all the time. God, give me the gift of faith that I would trust you also and have faith in who you really are, that you are a God who desires my good and that you can bring good out of all things, the messiest parts of my story, because that is the gospel. When he was crucified, it is now the most glorious sign of love.
Messy is a good word.
Yeah, it's messy.
It
sure is.
Yeah. And the biblical story is messy.
Yes.
You know, take a look at from Abraham on, you can see the zigging and zagging, and you know, you want to say, Lord, for heaven's sake, couldn't this have been neater? You got the exile, for heaven's sake. These are your people. Wasn't that their land?
Right.
So, and then you get to Thomas is, to me, I like the way you flipped that, too. I hadn't thought of that before. But I mean, think about that. Thomas has been with Jesus for 3 years. And he's been with his disciples, is the other apostles there. And I assume they have decent relationships between them. And yet he can't buy their story that Jesus is alive.
Right.
Yeah, and he's still going to insist he's got to see it himself.
That's right.
And Jesus honors that, which I think is one of the most amazing parts of it. But messy is an important word, because I think everybody feels that way from time to time.
Jesus, like to weave this into Lazarus, a lot of if we equate messy with smell, now we're in the Lazarus scene.
Yeah.
And Jesus says, roll away the stone, and they say, no, it will reek. It will be awful. And the key here is Jesus isn't afraid of the mess. He is not afraid of the smell. He presses into it. And the timing of it is what's hard for us. We love drive-through relationship, where we go up to the window of the gospel and say, I'll have a supersized happiness, and you can give me an extra frosty of goodwill, and blah, 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 blah. And then we go up, and we hope to give our rosaries, and we get back salvation. That is not relationship.
Right.
That's consumerism.
Mm-hmm. It's utilitarian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the relationship that God is inviting us to is one where it's long meals of love, long-standing, long relationships. Like there's maybe the Italians have something figured out when they linger at a meal, as opposed to, I have a bad habit, I'll eat and get the heck out of here. Mm-hmm. Jesus isn't afraid of messy. He's not afraid of smelly. And he presses into those things, primarily, like Heather, you said, for intimacy.
Yeah. Do we trust him? That's what it comes down to. Do we trust him? He can come in a flash, and he can work a miracle in a moment. And I've seen that. You know, my dad was miraculously healed of cancer, and he had 2 months left to live.
Wow.
And he prayed, and it happened right in his bed, you know, in the hospital. And he was, I mean, all the tumors were gone that they saw. And then I look at other stories in his life and my life where it's a long suffering.
Yeah.
But is God, are we willing to invite God there to stay there with us in the middle of the mess?
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Wonderful talking to you.
And I hope we'll continue our conversation in the future.
You're great. Yes.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much. Again, Jake and Heather Kim, you can get more at liferestoration.ce. We'll have a link at our site as well. I'm Al Cresto.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. Boom. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Why would God permit the devil to tempt his son in the desert? The symbolism behind those temptations, as provided by the Catholic Catechism, gives great insight into God's rationale. Jesus, driven by the Spirit, goes into the desert to live in solitude for 40 days. At the close of that period of prayer and fasting, the devil arrives to attempt to compromise Jesus' filial devotion to God, his Father. Satan tempts Jesus 3 times, and Jesus rebuffs him 3 times. This is a recapitulation of Satan's seduction of Adam. Only this time, he loses to the new Adam. It is also a recapitulation of Israel in the desert, when the Hebrews provoked God during their 40-year sojourn. In contrast, Jesus is totally obedient to his Father's will. Jesus' victory over temptation is a prelude to his victory over sin on the cross. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Our culture seems to gravitate between two extremes. We either despise waiting, you know, grumbling to ourselves, fidgeting with our phones as we sit in line at a red light or at the bank, or we like laziness. We like downtime. It's something we demand. It's an entitlement. Waiting is a recurring theme in Scripture. It is often tied to the idea of promise. We live on a promise. We are waiting on a promise. Noah waited for the waters to recede. Abraham waited for a son. The Israelites waited to enter the promised land. We are waiting for the culmination, the climax of the kingdom that will be fully manifest upon Christ's return. My guest, Jeannie Ewing, is the author of a number of books. Waiting with Purpose is what we're looking at today. But you might remember, Jeannie, from a conversation we had, a year or so ago, on her testimony book, Grief to Grace, From Grief to Grace, The Journey from Tragedy to Triumph, which ended up being one of our best interviews of the year, by the way. We ran it during that period between Christmas and New Year's. And Jeannie, it's good to have you with me.
Oh, it's good to be back with you, Al.
Yeah. Now, I should mention, your website is lovealonecreates.com, right?
Yes.
I want to make sure people know that. Well, this is a good theme. I'm surprised that there's not more written on this issue of waiting, because it is so important to a Christian way of life. I mean, we have to wait on God. The subtitle of your book, it's called Waiting with Purpose, Persevering When God Says Not Yet. Go ahead and give me the context for why you chose this topic.
Yeah, I was really surprised, too, that I couldn't find anything current that was written about this topic. Mm-hmm. It was what really started me getting interested in the topic of waiting was for about a year, the word wait on the Lord, hope in the Lord. These were things that came in Scripture to me, mm-hmm. almost on a daily basis. So I would mm-hmm. write in my journal, and I knew the Lord was speaking to my heart,
yes.
that there was a theme here. And so I started doing some research, trying to find some books about waiting, and I only found a couple of of books that were written, 25 years ago. And then another document that really, really influenced my book was written by Henry Nouwen, and it was actually just a very short essay. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, you know, maybe the Lord is asking me to read about this, to really pray about it, to let it kind of sit inside of my soul, mm-hmm. and then speak a universal truth to other people who don't really know what to do with these lulls in their life.
Right.
What's
right.
going on? Why do I feel stuck? Why do I feel in between?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of how I came up with the book, the storyline and everything.
Well, let's talk about the way society looks at this issue of waiting. You begin that in your first chapter, Societal Perspectives. Talk to me.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a really important foundation to set the tone for the rest of the book,
mm-hmm.
because almost everybody I've spoken with says that waiting is so hard for them. They just feel restless. They feel impatient. And then I also think that the enemy really tempts us in times of waiting because we might have these thoughts of doubt mm-hmm. or discouragement kind of creep in.
Yep.
And so that's one reason why. Another reason is this frenetic intemperance,
mm-hmm.
this just excessive busyness, doing, and constant running. And like you mentioned in your opening segment, I think that, you know, technology is good for a lot of reasons, but one of the main hindrances, especially in spiritual growth, is the fact that we have access to everything right now.
Okay.
And a lot of times these things become a distraction for us.
Yeah.
If we're waiting in line for 5 minutes, we get restless, we pull out our smartphone.
Right.
We start scrolling, we look at the internet.
Yeah.
If we don't know the answer to a question, we just go on Google.
Yep.
And so there is something to be said for generations past who didn't necessarily have answers right away.
Yep.
They had to kind of mull over things. They had to ponder things. They had to have conversations with people. And so that's, I think, something that's kind of gotten lost in our modern information age. And then I also mentioned acedia. So this spiritual laziness, this spiritual busyness. So
is this like sloth?
This habit, I think, of just saying, well, I feel like waiting is a waste of my time,
mm-hmm.
so I'm bored. I'm just going to fill my time with internet gaming or mm-hmm. shopping.
Sure.
Something else. So there's a lot of reasons why waiting is hard for us, and it's all influenced from society, from temptations from the devil,
mm-hmm.
and then from our own weaknesses.
So is this problem, is this similar to the sloth, the deadly sin, where you're just, again, spiritually lazy?
I think it can be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you think about it, most of us don't know what to do with time that we have.
Right.
We're so used to being productive, to working, that we don't know how to handle times in our life when maybe we are injured or
mm-hmm.
sick.
Yeah.
Maybe we're in a state of dependency. And we often feel like it's a burden. It's a punishment or a curse to be in a state where nothing seems to be happening in our life, nothing's moving forward.
Right.
And so I do think that it's easy to slip into those sins because we are so used to being constantly producing something, constantly working or climbing the corporate ladder or something like that.
No, I agree. And I know from my own experience that my wife is, we've talked about this years because that's one of my, as I'm getting older, I'm getting better at this, but most of us don't even have much margin in our life to pray, for heaven's sakes. And so waiting it seems like such a waste of time. But I mean, think of Jesus, and you refer to Jesus in the wilderness here, 40 days. What was he doing there? I mean, you know, it isn't as though he was, planning how the Gospels would be written. I mean, he was there in communion with that. He was waiting in many ways because his ministry, public ministry, begins after those 40 days.
So waiting for us, too, I think, is a time of preparation for something else that God has planned for our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to go through cycles and seasons, I found. Spiritually speaking, we kind of move from places of consolation to desolation and back again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We might have a spiritually fruitful time in life where we feel like everything's falling into place, things are moving forward with maybe a project or maybe something at work, maybe something in our personal life or a mm-hmm. relationship that we have. And we have a lot of consolations, lots of things that flower and blossom and unfurl. And then we might enter this period of desert, just like Jesus had to go into the desert. He chose mm-hmm. to go into the desert mm-hmm. because he knew how important that was to spend time in silence, in right. solitude, in prayer and reflection. And so those are really important opportunities in times of desolation when we feel very spiritually dry. We feel as if the Lord's not really answering us. He's not really moving anything forward. Something gets stuck. Maybe it's, like for me being a writer, sometimes it could be a book that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's really important to recognize that consolation prepares us. It gives us encouragement for the desert waiting that's up ahead. And then, of course, we will have an end to that. We will enter into the mission field again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we have to really, I think, surrender to those cycles and seasons that the Lord asks us to, and actually invites us to enter into.
That's well put. It sounds like, in a way, the way you're describing this, we should look upon waiting as a spiritual discipline. In other words, this is something we do with intention. We wait, and when we're waiting, we need to embrace the fact that we are waiting.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, and you know, another thing that really struck me when I was writing this book was the scripture about the foolish virgins and the wise virgins.
Mm.
And I thought about how that really does summarize, or it's a really good metaphor for our spiritual lives, our spiritual growth. Because if we allow the times of waiting to be fruitless, what do? We fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
We might spiritually fall asleep, like we were talking about with sloth, laziness. We might get distracted.
Mm-hmm.
We might think, oh, you know, that promise is not going to be fulfilled anytime soon.
Right.
I might as well eat, drink, and be merry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
then there are the wise virgins. They were vigilant. They were watching. They didn't know the time of fruition. They didn't have that answer, but they still had the hope. And they had the faith that it would happen. And so they were prepared. They had their oil ready. They had their lamps ready. And when the bridegroom came, he welcomed them. And so we have to be like them when we are waiting. We have to allow that time, no matter how long or how short it is, to be fruitful. And part of that is vigilance.
Very good. That's very good. I've never heard the parable of the wise and foolish virgins applied in that way. It makes tremendous sense. Well, how do you also, I mean, do you, so let's talk about then the Sabbath rest of God. So do you see waiting as in some way to be embraced as a type of Sabbath rest?
I do. I mean, that was another topic in one of my chapters, was about the gift of rest and how God rested. And
mm-hmm.
so he set this example for us. And again, you know, we look at society and Sunday has just kind of blended in with the rest of the days.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many people that I know who they're so busy, even on Saturdays, maybe with their children's extracurricular activities.
Sure.
Maybe they have to catch up on work on Saturdays. So yeah. What do they use Sunday for? Oh, I have to do yard work.
Yeah.
I have to do laundry. I have to go to the grocery. And so Sunday's really lost its sacredness.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like if we can get back to using Sunday as a day of real rest and rejuvenation, if we can enter into the Sabbath with this mindset of quiet, pondering, praying, and asking the Lord, what is it that you're inviting me to do? What is it that I can do for you? How can I console you? There's so many beautiful things that unfold in our relationship with the Lord
mm-hmm.
if we allow rest to become part of our waiting experiences, because God himself rested. And so we have to really do that in order to hear his voice clearly and respond properly.
You know, another thing to keep in mind here on this idea of Sabbath rest or the Lord's Day rest or however you want to put it, that is also a public witness. We may not realize it, but the fact that Christians adopt a day of rest, that it's woven into the fabric and rhythm of their life, for heaven's sakes, that actually bears witness to creation, and it bears witness to the resurrection. And we shouldn't be ashamed of telling people that we rest on Sunday.
Yes.
Hold it there, Jeannie. We'll come back. My guest, Jeannie Ewing, is the author of an outstanding little book here, which I highly recommend, called Waiting with Purpose, Persevering When God Says Not Yet.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
So many studies over the past 60 years show a connection between abortion and increased risk of breast cancer, depression, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, a breakdown in relationships. Women, when they do eventually decide to have children after they had an abortion, there's a bonding issue with the children. And yet many of those studies are pushed aside, and the studies that are embraced are the studies that are done by the people with so much to gain, claiming that all these pregnancies through rape occurred all because Roe v. Wade was overturned. And yet if you look at the roots of that study, every single author involved was connected to the abortion industry. And that's not journalism, that's propaganda. That's advocacy.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Make family life the most important activity on your calendar. Parents often worry about losing their kids' hearts to peers, to the culture, or to the media. But simply restricting your kids' access to friends, culture, or media isn't the answer. Spending more time with them is. Kids give their hearts to the people and things they spend the most time with. If we're not making daily family time the most important activity on our schedule, we're effectively giving our kids permission to give their hearts to someone other than us. Putting family time first and scheduling other activities around it is one of the most important practices Catholic families can have. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Talking about waiting, my guest, Jeannie Ewing, has written an outstanding book, Waiting with Purpose, Persevering When God Says Not Yet. We know that waiting can often be agonizing. We feel like we're wasting time. And it's important to make sure that time of waiting is embraced intentionally as a spiritual discipline. You distinguish between, active and passive waiting. Tell me what that distinction is.
Yes. So I use a couple of illustrations to explain that. So active waiting, we can think about like Advent. Mm-hmm. There's a specific promise that's been given, and we're waiting for it to be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Usually when we're in active waiting, we do this in community. So I used the illustration of the visitation of Our Lady to St. Elizabeth, mm-hmm. because right after she got the promise that she would bear the Messiah and she said yes, what did she do? She went in haste to visit her cousin, who was also expecting the prophet St. John the Baptist. And they celebrated in community this beautiful promise in joy. And so there's a lot of that. There's a lot of joy, expectancy. You can use the spiritual metaphor of pregnancy when we are in active waiting. Hmm. Those are very, very few waiting experiences in our lives.
Okay.
The majority of them are what is called passive waiting, and passive waiting has to do with passion. And passive waiting tends to be something like that's done to us rather than what we enter into. So I become the object of waiting. I don't choose it. So let's say I have an illness, and I have to have someone come in my house and clean my house and take my kids to school, and I'm in a state of helplessness. I didn't choose that. I don't really like it. It's hard for me. It really kills my ego. Mm-hmm. That's passive waiting. Passive waiting could be, oh, I'm late for work, and I just hit construction, and I'm going to be even later, and I have to sit here and wait. It can be that agonizing period of time where you're waiting for that phone call to hear the biopsy result.
Right.
There's so many different ways that the Lord invites us to participate in His passion when we experience passive waiting. And even though it's painful and it hurts, and the reason I believe is that it's filled with all this uncertainty and unknown. There's a lot of tension when we're waiting for something that we don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're kind of stuck in this place between hope and fear. We hope that something good will come of this, or what we would like to happen, or what we think is good. But then we're afraid of the worst. So that's why I think it's agonizing at times with passive waiting.
Because we don't really know what the outcome, the immediate outcome will be. I mean, as you say.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's a good point. You have a chapter here, The Agony of Expectancy. In that case, what is one expecting?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
That's what's so agonizing. So, and you know, there's the irony of those words, agony and expectancy.
Right.
So, again, we have to go back to what you mentioned in your opening segment about the promise of resurrection and the fulfillment of when Jesus' second coming happens. And even if that's all we have to hold on to, when we're lingering in this place of unknown and uncertainty, mm-hmm. that's what has to be our hope and our encouragement. And I think that's the beauty of Christianity, mm-hmm. is that we know that suffering and passion is not the end. It's really the beginning of our eternal existence, because we really have to be purified and pruned through passion, our own particular passion experience. We have to go through that. We have to carry our cross in order to experience the resurrection of eternal life. So that's the agony of expectancy. We know that there is hope. We know there's a promise that will be fulfilled, maybe in the next life, maybe not in this one. And so we have to cling to that when we are really, really suffering and hurting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This idea of waiting on a promise, and in this case, the promise of resurrection, the promise of His return, I'm not sure if people really grasp how central that dynamic is in Scripture. You've got, again, go back to Noah. Okay. Waiting, he knows of the flood, he has to prepare the ark, he's waiting for the flood to end, then he's got a new covenant that comes to him. Abraham is waiting on the promise, Moses and the children of Israel are waiting to enter the promised land. you have the children of Israel after the exile waiting for return to the land. You've got, of course, the coming of Jesus, the waiting for Messiah. You have the apostles and now the church waiting for the promise to be fulfilled. I mean, this is core. This is core Christianity, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think you're right. I think that most of us forget about that because the world tells us something so contrary.
Yeah.
Suffering is evil. It's punishment. It's something to be avoided, something to run away from, something to stop. Mm-hmm. Instead of suffering might be an invitation. It is an invitation for us to participate in the suffering of Christ, to console him. Maybe it's also an invitation to mission. So I believe, too, that when we're waiting and God's preparing us for something else, whether or not we know what that something else is, I really believe that there is mission in that.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if I'm experiencing cancer and I make it and I go into remission, maybe part of my mission is ministering to other people who are in that place where they were just diagnosed.
Right.
Maybe I'm supposed to volunteer or do some kind of speaking engagement that inspires and encourages other cancer patients. Maybe I'm supposed to start a nonprofit. There's all kinds of things that can open up that are really beautiful and really bring about healing and strength when we allow our suffering to be transformed by God's love. So absolutely, this is so central, and it's so important, it's so critical that we do not lose focus on the promise, on the new covenant, on the resurrection.
I think one of the problems that people have in the midst of suffering is how distracted they are by the suffering, so that you don't feel you're doing it very well. And you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're in the hospital. You're just undergoing surgery. You want to offer this suffering up. You're quite intentional about it. You're committed to it. But you find that you do it, and then 30 seconds later, you've forgotten you did it. I mean, you go back. It's like it's even worse than distractions we have in prayer.
Yeah.
So what consolation do you have for people who don't think they do it very well? Enduring the suffering.
I don't know that any of us perfectly suffer well unless we become saints or until we reach heaven. And I think it's important for us to just be patient with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing that waiting really affords us is to grow in patience, which means long suffering, to grow in perseverance.
That's good.
So
yeah.
Even when you offer up your suffering, your pain, and then 30 seconds later you forget about it, don't get discouraged by that.
Mm-hmm.
Just you have to make a conscious effort, and sometimes I have to do this multiple times a day to allow myself to die to self and just really say, okay, Lord, make good from my mistakes. I know that your grace will compensate for all that I lack, for all the things I've done wrong today, all the different times that I've yelled at my children or I've forgotten to pay attention to their emotional needs. I know that you're going to make up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many countless ways that really in our spiritual helplessness, we can turn to the Lord time and time and time again, and we know that his mercies will always be new and always available to us.
Yeah.
So I really think it's important that we think about that, even if we, quote, mess up and don't suffer well. It's, you know, we're all on this journey together.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and what is mercy for? Right? I mean,
yes.
Mercy is for those of us who fall short, for heaven's sakes. I mean, that's why the emphasis on mercy is so important. Gratitude. Tell me about the role of gratitude in this whole process of waiting.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're feeling stuck, it's important, or sometimes we kind of feel like, oh, Nothing good's ever going to come of this. Again, probably because we're being tempted by the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we look back on our lives, at all the answered prayers, small and great, all the things that the Lord has blessed us with, it's a very big encouragement that where we are now is not where we're always going to be, and that there will be a time of flourishing again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually found this to be a very powerful exercise in my prayer life, is the times when I'm feeling really discouraged, and usually this happens when there's some sort of spiritual darkness, dryness in prayer, I will write down all the things that I remember, anything. I just exhaust the list until my memory is no longer, you know, thinking of things.
Yeah.
And then I look back on that in future times when I'm feeling stuck, And I think, oh, yes, God will come through. I know he will because he always has. He's mm-hmm. always faithful. So that's why I think gratitude and looking back on our blessings is really important. Another prayer that I say a lot when I feel I'm feeling stuck is, thank you, Lord, for all that you have done, all that you are doing, and all that you will do in
yeah.
my life.
Yeah, that's
very
good.
Powerful.
Yeah. Now, do you have, I would guess that you have a sense of story about your life in terms of God's call and guidance. And now that story gets shaken up, at least in my life, it's been shaken up a number of times. And, we don't write the chapters, but we do respond to what God is doing. Do you have a sense of narrative that you live with?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, even from the time when I was 5 years old.
Really?
I really felt, I wrote about this in From Grief to Grace, but I really felt like I wanted to do something great for God mm-hmm. with my life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it really helps that I'm a deep melancholic. I think about things deeply. I feel things deeply. And I'm very sensitive, very attuned mm-hmm. to God's voice. And so all my life, no matter all the mistakes and sins that I've made, and there are many, but I've always heard God calling. I've felt that nudge in my heart. And so it's so interesting how it's like all of life's experiences for all of us, it's like a piece of the puzzle. Your suffering, your joys, your marriage, mm-hmm. your children's, you know, their existence and the way that you raise them, and your childhood, your parents, your family of origin, your work that you do, yeah. your education, all these things really, they form this beautiful tapestry that we're not going to see the big picture, the full picture, until we die, but I believe that about all of us. I think
yeah.
we all have a narrative.
I do
Everybody
too.
Has a story, and everyone I've talked to, their stories are so beautiful.
Yes.
And so I think that those narratives should shape us. They should shape how we see our lives, how we see our waiting, times of waiting, and how we use that time fruitfully.
Jeannie, got about 10 seconds. How can people stay in touch with you?
Yeah, they can go to my website, lovealonecreates.com.
Thanks so much. We'll talk again. This is a wonderful
Thanks,
book.
Thanks, Al.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry providing families nationwide with a better solution centered around whole health, spirit, mind, and body. Our members share their medical burdens within a faith-filled community. At CMF Curo, our members have access to a spiritual director, concierge services, and other health and spiritual resources. Find out if CMF Curo is a better solution for your family. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
thanks again for joining us over the last 2 hours. If you go to AveMariaRadio.net, you can follow up on the conversations that we had today. We'll have links to Jake and Heather Kim's Life Restoration Ministries work, and also Heather's book, Abide, Pathways for Transformative Healing and Intimacy with Jesus. Also, we'll have Jeannie Ewing's book there. Again, that book, Waiting with Purpose, Persevering When God Says Not Yet. As we go off the air, Catholic Answers Live is ready to take your calls. And we'll be back tomorrow with more on Cresta in the Afternoon. Monica Miller joins us again to discuss a brand new book that she has about the first three chapters of Genesis. We'll also talk with some representatives from an organization called Parents Defending Education that is doing great work documenting some of the craziness that is happening in our elementary and middle schools. I also wanted to offer a congratulations going out to another member of the EWTN radio family, The Rock AM 1260 in Cleveland, celebrating 9 years with EWTN. Congrats to Bernadette Boguski and the great team at Cleveland Catholic Radio from all of your friends here at EWTN. And one final reminder that you can tune in Thursday morning on EWTN television for a full coverage of the Canadian March for Life. This begins with the National Mass for Life from Canada's Notre Dame Cathedral, presided over by Archbishop Marcel Dabous, followed by the biggest pro-life event in Canada, the March for Life Ottawa. Again, that is 10:30 Eastern in the morning on Thursday. We'll remind you about that tomorrow as well. And we're done for today. We'll be back with more on tomorrow's Cresta in the Afternoon. Until then, have a great rest of your evening, and God bless.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.